Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Punk Rock NBA podcast.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock NBA. Today's episode is a bonus episode. This is the audio version of an interview I did about a year ago with my friend Biggie. He manages a bunch of bands that you may have heard of. For example, Knocked Loose and Every Time I Die, among many others. He is the owner of Good Fight Management, who manage probably, you know, if you're into like the heavier side of hardcore or the more hardcore side of metalcore, they probably manage about half the bands that you listen to. And I was really excited to sit down with Biggie and just kind of unpack how all of that works. Like, what exactly does a manager do? What should an artist look for in a manager? What should a manager look for in an artist? Like, how do managers get paid? There's a lot of questions out there about this, and we get into all of that here. The audio is not the best, so I apologize for that, but we were just kind of doing the best with what we could. He works out of the Violent Gentleman office down in Huntington, so we just kind of found a room there. It was a little bit loud, but I think you'll be able to get the idea. It's kind of the reality of when you're doing things run and gun, as we sometimes do over here on this podcast. We work with what we can, but before we get into the episode, I just wanted to quickly thank everybody who supports us on Patreon, especially those of you who support at the True Cult level or above. It is because of your support that we're able to do this show at all. It's because of you guys that I was able to hire Deanna Chapman, who is the show's producer and editor. She is amazing. She makes this whole thing happen. There's no way that I would be able to do it without her, and there is no way that we'd be able to bring her on without the support of all the patrons. So thank you very much. If you're interested in supporting us on Patreon, there's a link to that in the show notes. And with that out of the way, let's get into this episode.
I got into this by meeting the Orange County hardcore bands, the Throwdowns, 18 Visions, Bleeding Throughs, becoming friends with them, ending up going on tour with them. In that early 2000s era of touring, I met all those bands, which included Every Time I Die, toured with Every Time I Die, decided I wanted to get off the road after about 10 years and wanted to be a manager, and they let me manage them as my first client. So that's the short of the very long of it. So I did about 10 years on the road, and now I'm about 11 years into managing bands.
So you were like, I didn't realize you were on the road that much. It was like a tour manager?
Yeah, tour manager.
Got it.
When I started selling merch, and then it was like we also need someone to like hold our money while we, you know, handle the basic logistics. So I would start tour managing from going from a merch guy and then being the guy that would hold the money and then being the guy that would go settle at night, then being the guy that would call the label, then being the guy that would deal with the van when it broke down, then
right.
You know, before I knew it, I was tour managing.
And that was kind of the beginning of when bands, like in our world, even started having tour managers.
Totally.
Because before that, was like, a tour manager? What the fuck are you talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah, I didn't really have
one. So you can split $0, you know, six ways?
Exactly. When it was like a thing, because I was out with 18 Visions, and they put out, had to be Vanity, I'm assuming, and there was money coming in, and we were just like, we're traveling with money.
Right.
Like, this is weird. I remember calling the label, you know, Josh Chesko, be like, we have money, and like, I don't know what to do with this, you know? So it was
I've never done this before.
Yeah, we learned, everyone learned together on the go. Some of my clients are Circus Survive, Every Time I Die, Between the Buried and Me, Knocked Loose, Turnstile, kind of a lot of bands that I have my hands in.
Can you just explain exactly what a manager does and doesn't do? Like, do you book shows for bands? Do you help them find a label? What do you do and not do?
Well, it's funny because that's a very common question. And if you like ask my wife, for example, who knows me very well, she'd be like, I don't know. Like, sometimes he's talking about this, sometimes, but they don't, no one really knows. That's not in it. But my friend explained it almost better what we don't do. It's easier to explain. So everyone's first question is, so like band goes on tour, you like book the show? It's like, no, that's the booking agent. Oh, okay. Well, like if they get like a contract, do you like go over that? It's like, yeah, but technically their lawyer really goes over that. It's like, oh, okay, so you're the guy like that's on the tour with them and like making sure, no, that's actually the tour manager.
So you don't do shit.
I don't do anything, which is the biggest secret in the world. Just kind of get into management and you don't do anything. But it's truly everything else. It's a liaison in between every decision there is. From tiny decisions like shirt designs to big decisions on what deal we should take to sign to a label. And everything in between. And a lot of it, as we get older, is straight up therapist, psychologist. You know, just having time to deal with someone who's having a hard day on the road or having a tough time now in their marriage or missing their kids, like that kind of thing. That's a huge part of it. But like,
someone's like, I don't know if I want to tour anymore.
Totally. But yeah, I get those calls all the time from bands that people would go like, you know, like that happens. But for like nuts and bolts and probably your viewership to understand and like really get it, it's like we deal with all elements of business for the band. And while there are other people that help, business managers, booking agents, lawyers, all those people that are all part of the team, if you look at it as all those people are up here, I'm in the middle liaisoning info and or getting info from the band back and forth to those people, making sure the ship runs and making sure the booking agent stays on track and making sure the merch is ready to get on tour, making sure we have a crew booked, making sure visas are ready, making sure flights are booked. I mean, it seems kind of endless, but at the same time, like it's just seems like whatever slack there is, we pick up, and for better or for worse. So like when I started managing, there was no social media, and now that's a huge part of our life. Like we have a social media department at Good Fight because there is such a demand for it and so many platforms. Like there's no chance I could keep up with understanding those platforms, let alone mastering them, let alone then implementing them. I need someone else to do that. And it's at that point where sadly, like...
So your job as a manager is to put together the team that will do a great job of running that.
Exactly.
Not necessarily doing it yourself.
Right. And every management company is different. Like some people handle others, things that other people don't. I handle things for certain bands that I don't for other bands because it was like an old thing that I regret doing. Like I never want to be the business manager for any bands ever again, but I am the business manager for a couple bands because it's just, I'm not going to all of a sudden say, hey, you got to like pay this other dude 5% now just because that's just not cool, you know?
Well, before I get into the other questions, that is one thing I wanted to clear up because I think it explains a lot of things in the management world and things that do and don't make sense. How do managers get paid? Do they pay you a salary? Do you get a percentage? Like, how does that work exactly?
Everyone's different, of course. Got to start off by saying that. But generally, the industry standard is the manager will make 15% of every dollar. So if a band goes out and gets paid $1,000, manager gets paid $150. The band goes out and sells $1,000 of merch. This is where it gets gray, but a manager makes 15% of that. Most companies this day and age will do a net deal, so it's at least 15% after the merch bill is paid. Mm-hmm. So on $1,000, maybe $650 of that is true net. You commission 15% of that leftover $650. But it's also across the board. So any deal, you know, whether it's album deals, royalties, it's every dollar. And like I said, it's a sliding scale. And
so if they play their song in a Mazda commercial, that's part
of it. They make 20 grand and we get 15%
of it.
You know? So it's supposed to be on every dollar. It doesn't always work out like that because when the band goes to Europe and expenses are high, I'm not going to be like, hey, you owe me 15% of the $1,000. You know, you come home with $1,000 left. Well, technically, you owe me $6,000 based off of all the numbers. Let's not do that.
Right.
You know, so that's the other good thing about having a lot of bands is I'm not solely relying on one income. You know, there's a lot of revenue streams for us to where when a band needs a break, we can cut them the break, you know, and deals are different across the board. You know, you'll hear by no means when Metallica goes and plays and makes millions of dollars, that is their manager making 15%. Once it gets to a certain level, they're usually on a salary base or a much slimmed down commission. But we do a 15% at Good Fight, we do a 15% net deal.
Well, the reason I ask is because a common question that I hear from people, whether it's bands or producers or, you know, various other kinds of people, is like, they ask, well, how do I get a manager? Thinking that the situation is their problem is I don't have enough business, whether that's I don't have enough shows or enough clients or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. How do I get a manager who will like bring me all this work? And my answer to them usually is, remember, a manager gets paid a percentage. So it just doesn't make financial sense for a good manager to work with you until you're kind of at the point where you almost don't need a manager. There's like that middle ground where that's where it makes sense. But I think it's important for people to think about it that way when they're looking for a manager, is what's in it for you?
Yeah.
Because you get a percentage, and if it's 15% of $1,000 a year, it just doesn't make financial sense for you to take that on.
No, especially when I'm paying salaries, so I'd actually lose money on a band like that. Because that's... like I said, every company is different, but the way we're set up, if I put more responsibilities on anyone's plate at the company, I give them a raise in some form or another, you know?
And that doesn't mean you don't like the band if you say you can't work
with them. Of course not. It's just dollars and cents. Yeah. You know? Exactly that. That's the hardest question. I get the random emails so much about, like, you've talked about ad nauseum, you know, like the next step, how do I get to the next level, right. Blah, blah, blah. It's just like, you'll know and the manager will know. Yeah. And it's so rare that there's just this amazing band making money that nobody has their eye on. You know?
Right.
Like,
right,
it's just
right.
so rare. Like, right. some booking agent has seen it or heard of it and they bring it to a manager friend. And there's
like,
just
do you know how many tickets these guys have been selling?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, when I get a new band, it's never like, oh, I just grabbed them. It's like, okay, we're one of six people they're meeting with. Hopefully we win the, mm-hmm. you know, the contest.
So how would you approach something like that then? If there's like, you know, a band that's making some buzz and there's five, six people who want to work with them, like, what would you do to get them to choose to work with you as opposed to the other people in the deal?
I come at them, I think I relate to band members really well because I spent 10 years on the road, you know, so I can get down into the nitty gritty of touring better than most, you know, and understand that in 2019, that's where the vast majority of money's coming from. Everyone wants to talk about like syncs and publishing and all that fun stuff, which is cool for like this tiny, tiny echelon of bands. Like most bands make the vast majority of their money from touring. And I can level with them on that. And I can just explain to them that I get bands, I love bands, and I'm our style is not for everybody in terms of focusing on touring and focusing on merch and focusing on things that actually make you money. So if that's not your avenue,
cool. As opposed to what? What would be the other things that some other people might focus on instead of that?
Song syncs and getting their songs in Mazda's commercials. Mm-hmm. That's not my specialty. It's happened. Mm-hmm. We've got some cool syncs, but it's like that's from the publishing company. You know, but there are, I'm sure there's some movers and shakers out there that could be like, you sign with me and we're doing this. Mm-hmm. And that's just not my style. I break it down for them very brass tacks, being like, what are your goals? That sounds like my world. If not, over here.
Here's how I would see us working together. Totally. If you're into that, let's do it. Exactly. If you're not, all good.
Exactly. And I don't, a big thing different with us and a lot of management companies is we don't do contracts. So my pitch is always hire us. If you don't like us, you can walk away at any time. There's no contract in terms of you sign with us, you're with us for 3 years. There's no sunset clause, meaning like if I booked you a tour and a year and a half and you fire me, you still owe me money on that tour. It's like, I mean, very rarely happens. It's like, if you don't want to work with this anymore, you go, I go. I think that's kind of appealing, you know?
That's interesting to me because, you know, there's lots of times when I've been working with people who obsess over redlining a contract, five rounds back and forth on it. And I get that. Obviously, you know, there is a legal argument to be made for that. But to me, it's like, are any of us ever going to litigate over this? Because right. It's like $6,000. No. So either we trust each other or we don't.
Right. Yeah. And especially in the service-based industry where like, I get it. If you're a label and like we're putting in hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially into this and like,
yeah,
got to have some contracts there. For us, it's like, it's time. Really, it's time, you know? And I get it. It would be terrible.
Would you want to like lock somebody into a room? You know what I mean?
I have some crazy stories where like I've been managing a band. Like they left a manager, I'm now managing them, and they had to be like, dude, they like showed us this contract we signed a long time ago, and we are screwed if we don't stay with them, and like lost the band to go back to them. It's either like, you can manage us and pay them for 2 years, and then we're free. I'm just like, that sounds insane.
So as a manager, like,
why would you want to be like that?
Why would you want to work with somebody who doesn't want to be with you? I don't understand that.
I don't understand it either. Maybe, like I said, it's like they have to. I don't know. It's an ego thing, or it's just like cutthroat from an era that they're from, right. But. Maybe coming from punk hardcore touring, I'd just be like, that sounds terrible.
Like how could you even have that phone call? Like, like after they realize that they're locked in, you're like, okay, well let's talk on Monday about, you know, what's going on with this tour. Like,
yeah,
it just be the weirdest call ever.
It's crazy. And you know, I have some friends that I respect as managers that do contracts and they have some horror stories where it's like, dude, I worked 3 years on this band when nobody cared. And it started getting traction. We started getting the things lined up. You know, let's say back then it would be like a Warped Tour or whatever, like some big, like potentially career changing scenario. And then, you know, Johnny Sexy manager comes around and I want to be with them because their bands are bigger. It's like, I just got screwed on 3 years of my life. So it's like, I don't want to like, you know, shit on someone who does contracts, but I don't think that's the case most of the time. You're talking about, you know, the minority. So in the majority of the time in my life, I work with more established bands with long careers, and it seems to work out for me knowing that the door is open on either side at all times. That's just
I'm not talking shit on contracts and there's a time and a place for them. My thing is just like arguing over, you know, whether the comma should be between therefore and. It's just like, dude, who, like, we're not like, if we're talking about like the rights to the next season of Stranger Things, sure, let's make sure every T and I are, you know, but for most things, it's just like either I trust you or I don't. And if I don't trust you, no contract in the world is going to stop you from trying to fuck me or vice versa.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, if somebody's a snake, they don't give a shit what it says in the contract.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And there's just never been a time where I'm like...
Like, people think it's some magic talisman that, like, you hold it, it says this in the contract. Like, it's a garlic to a vampire, and then, like, it's going to suddenly make you, like, unable to be dishonest. That's just not how it is.
Yeah. People think there's a lot of magic. People think, like... that dude manages this band. If I sign with him, we'll be the next this band. And it's like, let me tell you something. If that dude could make the next this band, he would have already done it.
Exactly.
So there's some magic with that band. And that's the, like, I deal with that all the time because, like, I don't manage the hugest bands. Yeah. But, I mean, they're all great career bands that, like, I'm so lucky to have the roster I have. But I don't have anyone that's sold out, you know, Staples Center or even arenas, you know? Like, so when I hear that being, like, people I'm going up against for like a new client, it's like, oh, they have like this band, da da da, like kind of roster comparing. I'm like, that's great. Like, maybe you would be the next huge band, but chances are there was lightning in a bottle there, and that's why the rest of his roster isn't like that, you know?
Well, same way as people like to say that the reason why their band didn't blow up is because the label didn't support them, or this or that or the other. As though the label has, or anybody has, like, this magic button.
Yeah. And if the label's not going, like, you know what I don't want? Another huge band.
Exactly.
I don't want another huge band.
Like, if the labels had some machine where they just put bands in and, like, you know, platinum albums, they would do it every time.
All of us would do it all the time, ever.
But even the biggest label or management company has lots and lots of flops.
Duds, yeah.
Because that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, and that's the sad thing about it is the flops take up the exact same amount of time, probably more, than the huge moneymakers.
But that's just the game you play.
The 80-20 principle is so true in management, it's like gross. When I heard that, I was just like, it was like somebody just shined a mirror in my face, and I'm like, you're right.
My life.
You are right. Most of the money I make are from these easy bands that just get it and go, and people like them, and it goes. And then all the time I'm spending on these bands where it's like, I'm trying to fit square pegs and round holes across the board. You know, trying to find their fan base, trying to find the tour to take them on, trying to find the label to sign them, versus like, yeah, of course you want to play with Turnstile.
Right.
Of course you want to take out every time I die. Like, these are cool bands and valuable bands, versus some other bands where I'm just like, please, give me that, you know?
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
Well, speaking of those bands, like the career bands, it's a kind of segment of bands I've been thinking about a lot lately. It's like Every Time I Die, Between the Buried and Me, Circa, you know, who are not, they're definitely good-sized bands, mm-hmm. but they're not huge. However, they will be able to play. I think any of those bands could play shows for 30 more years if they wanted to.
They have found their fan. Their fans are along for the ride.
Yeah. What are you, and that to me is like what, if I was in a band, that's the template I would pursue.
Yeah, you mentioned that you'd rather have like a smaller diehard fan base than like a come and go. Like,
yeah.
I've watched it with some of my friends' bands that are bigger, and I'll be like, oh man, what's up with the band? It's like, last single didn't take off, so we're kind of just stuck home for a year. I'm just like, what? You know, like depending on that is insane.
Yeah. So what are the you've worked with so many of these bands, and even the ones you haven't worked with, you've been friends with them mm-hmm. for decades, I'm sure. What are the kind of common threads you see with bands that have that kind of longevity?
Commonalities between them. I feel like all the bands that I try to focus on a nice mixture, like I said, I focus a lot on touring, a nice mixture of types of touring they do. So it's cool to be the cool, credible band, but it's also cool to get new fans. Mm-hmm. You know, like Every Time I Die is probably like the standout on all of them and like the biggest they've ever been and cool enough to go and play, you know, with whoever the Converges of the world, but also like
they're the coolest now that they've ever been.
Right. You know, but they'll go and play with some like not cool band and be the cool band on that bill. And we've been doing that forever. We did every other Warped Tour for like over a decade. Mm-hmm. We did even Warped Tours since from when I was touring with them up until the last one.
So Warped Tour is to get
new fans. Hey, we're this, and the same thing. They were never the band where like, dude, we're up against Every Time I Die slot. They did great, but they weren't the like Pierce the Veil of that year or anything like that ever. But what they always did was have young bands talk about on stage and tons of new kids checking them out. Like, I've seen that name for a long time. Like, oh, wow, you watch them, you're walking away a fan. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, they're cool. They play tight. You're at Warped Tour, so you like aggressive music. Like, they're going to win you over.
So what I'm hearing there with them is that they didn't sort of reject the younger generation the way a lot of bands do.
Exactly. And the opposite. We very much focused on understanding that, like, look, we're asking people to come out and see us up to four times a year sometimes, you know? Like, you got to get new people out. Think about what it takes now to get somebody off the couch, away from Netflix, buy a ticket, drive to the show, get in. Oh my God. Like there is just a billion roadblocks that occur.
A lot of friction there.
Yeah. There's a billion roadblocks that occur. So we need the biggest pool possible. And the only way to have a big pool is to focus on young people. And in our case of heavier music, like girls, you know, it's a very overlooked demographic, sadly, where it's like, you forget that if girls like your band, you have 100% more people like potentially at your shows. And so you see the bands that do really well. It's like a nice mix of male and females, you know, old and young.
I think like A Day to Remember is a perfect example of that. They've never pandered to like, you know, the fangirl kind of audience, but girls have always been welcome at their shows as well as guys. And like, to me, that's like the template for how, again, how I would approach it if I was in a band.
Right. And, you know, maybe A Day to Remember loses like the dude in the Torch shirt or whatever.
Oh no.
But they gain all the people that go to Warped Tour and go like spend money on music. And potentially are lifelong fans. Right. You know? Like, I'll take that all day. And it's, I'm not saying you shouldn't be like strategic about it and like, you know, cater to that demographic, but maybe don't try to like
consciously push them
right,
away.
Make the show like an unsafe environment, yeah, the yeah. hardest thing right. possible. And like, you know, that's your band. That's your band. It is what right. it is. But if you have some way to try to include everyone in every way, it's just better for business
for
across
sure.
the board, you know?
So the flip side of that, you work with some of those like career bands, you also work with some, I guess, newer bands like say Knock Loose and Turnstile, who kind of both came out of the gate pretty strong and have got a level of, I'll say mainstream exposure. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not being played on the radio, but they talk about them on Billboard and NPR
yeah.
and shit. What would you say are the keys to those two bands in particular getting the attention of those kind of mainstream outlets and that kind of audience?
Right. Obviously, just like we were talking about, if I could push the button and be like, oh, this is what Turnstile did, this is what Knock Loose did.
Yeah.
There's no direct answer, but I can tell you that Turnstile is the most inclusive band there is. And they're a funny one because sometimes the way they make decisions and think and sometimes overthink things drive me nuts. And we'll be thinking like, this is such a no-brainer. Why are we not doing this?
Uh-huh.
But then we, as 40-year-old dudes that sit behind desk all day, have to understand that like there is a method to their madness.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they're doing, playing the music they're playing, that the average person could, the average even underground music listener could be like, I don't know, let's see what's so cool about this.
Right.
There's got to be a method to their madness.
Yeah.
So I credit them a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a lot of contacts. They're juiced in to the underground and the above ground and everywhere else that like in a way that I'm not. So I can guide them as best I can in terms of like managing a career and like being smart with decisions and like
mm-hmm.
budgeting and all that jazz. But like, there's got to be some level of like, hey, you know more than me in this. So in that band in particular, that's what I think the case is. They're on, you know, on a major label.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those press looks, those aren't me. That's not me calling up and be like,
sure,
we need
right.
the cover of GQ.
Right.
Not me. They have a gnarly publicist that
yeah.
got us insane opportunities. And
But even then, that same publicist could try to get me in GQ and it's not going to happen.
No, exactly.
So there's something about them
exactly.
that's special.
And they're infectious. And it's the same thing. If you see them live, no matter if you think like, they sound like 311, fuck this, you leave going like, that was fucking cool.
Yeah.
It's undeniable. You
yeah.
cannot not. My daughter's 6 and they're her favorite band because she watched them just like, these guys are so cool
yeah.
and so nice and like legitimately care about creating a safe and fun environment for everybody. It's, you can't fake that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. And it's just, you feel that, you know?
So how about Knock Loose? Cause that's the one that actually surprises me more.
Yeah.
Like Turnstile makes sense to me because, you know, their music is a lot more accessible. They have like such a cool, like aesthetic. Knock Loose is the one. I love Knock Loose, but it...
Yeah, because it sounds like what you listen to.
Yeah, exactly. But that's, like, nasty shit. They're not, like, these huge, like, personalities that, you know, have some larger-than-life kind of persona,
mm-hmm.
but they are getting more traction than I would have ever guessed a band like that could get, and I'm really interested in why.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you exactly why, because it's the same thing where... I'll have people that are kind of like fringe being like, I hear about this Knock Loose band all the time. And those fringe people, I can show them like Turnstile or even E-Tid select songs.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, oh, okay. If I put on Knock Loose, they're just like, what? Like, this is just straight
out. Yeah.
brutal. Like,
yeah.
I don't get it. The voice is crazy. Where's the singing part? You know, but they're along those same lines where they do their thing. And like, it's strange because where they take influence from is what we grew up on.
Yeah.
And it's an era where it wasn't a big thing.
Right.
You know, like the 90s or whatever, hardcore wasn't like something that like, or even a sound that many people aspired for.
Right.
And I don't know if it's because this new generation hasn't heard it or they get, you know, the cosign from tons of bands of our generation that all like them musically and personally, or it's lightning in a bottle or
yeah.
the label did, you know, Pure Noise is great. And they're all over this band.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the exact reason. Like,
yeah.
you know, I wish I had some sexy answer,
yeah.
but they're just awesome kids making very like calculated decisions and everything has a point. There's no like randomness with art or anything. It's like, it is all very thought out from lyrics to color schemes to who they're touring with. They're already on that. Like when we headline, we're going to show you what we like and we're taking out cool hardcore bands and this is what we listen to, but we're also not afraid to go support very much not hardcore
mm-hmm.
bands and grab those kids also.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it. I've seen these kids that are like ready for softer music and they stand out like a sore thumb as this heavy band on the bill, and it just always totally works.
For the kid that who's in that crowd that is interested in something heavy, he just found his new favorite band.
Oh, yeah. And that's the same thing. They look great on stage, yeah, and play tight. Brian says great, like, just cool, inclusive, hardcore, yeah, words that, like, if you've never heard that, you're just like, what?
You know, he's what I mean? A really good frontman, even though he doesn't have that, like, huge, larger-than-life persona. He's definitely very charismatic in a way, yeah, that, like, you want to look at him when he's on stage or in a video or something. You have a hard time looking away.
Yeah, I mean, they defy all the questions that everyone wants. Of like, how do I get bigger? I need to do this in my world. Do I need to be in a different city? It's like, they're from Oldham County, Kentucky.
Yeah. Like,
they created their own thing and toured around their own thing enough to where people just start noticing. And mm-hmm, once you're undeniably good and undeniably making waves, booking agent takes notice, label takes notice. They say, we need a manager. It's just, you know, that's how I feel like a lot of people that watch this go, like, what do I do? And it's like, they just start small and the bubble grows. And the bubble grows.
I will say one thing they did, which I think, I'm sure it was a deliberate decision, maybe even coming on it, was working with Will Putney. I think really leveled them up.
Totally.
Because that first record, I think the songs were there, but the production was, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the one they did with Will was like clearly leveled them up.
Totally. Yeah. I probably don't give engineers enough credit coming from my world of like, that's just the artist brain and the manager brain,
yeah,
are very
right,
different.
Right.
Like, I'm a linear as fuck person. You put me in a spreadsheet and I'm like, let's go. You tell me to like pick out a snare tone. I'm just like, dude, please somebody, you know, and that's just,
they all
I
sound
know,
good to me. Tell
right,
me which one you like.
Exactly. And that's knowing your strengths. I think that's the big thing. Like, I know my strengths is like on that linear side. And so I'll hire people or get help from people that aren't like that. So I don't mean to forget Will, but Will's incredible. I think Will's delivered some of the best records for my bands that have a lot of records,
mm-hmm,
ever. And it's very rare that at least my bands, I shouldn't say very rare, mostly my bands like to jump around. And there's a couple that stick with their guy, and a couple of very jump around bands are like returning to Will.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, well,
he's Will, definitely the guy right now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He's definitely the guy, and he's broken. I mean, E-Tit are a hard nut to crack, personality wise. People think that like, I watched the DVD and those dudes just like do keg stands and party all day. Like, that is not true. They're old and have, yeah, like a lot of personalities and now a lot of variances with other bands, other careers, families. There's a lot going on there. So if you can break into that camp, I think you can break into any camp, mm-hmm, and they love them.
If you look at a lot of those, sorry, I mean to cut you off, but I think there's an interesting point. Is like a lot of these kind of career bands don't really fit neatly into any one place.
Right.
They kind of just weave between a bunch of them.
Totally.
And I think there's something to be said for that.
Right. Yeah, it's hard. It's just, everyone wants to be the cool band, of course. Everyone wants to be like credited from press outlets and all that jazz. But like, if not cool mall kids like your band, be happy someone does. Because,
yeah,
at one point no one did, and you would have done anything to have 1,000 people care about your band, let alone in one city. And then if you tell the kids starting out, you're gonna play to 1,000 people, but it's just kids from the mall that like really don't care about music. They'd be like, I don't care, that sounds amazing.
Right.
And then you get some notoriety and you see your friend that was, yeah, got praise in Pitchfork. You're just like, you gotta be this cool band. And I just wanna be like, dude, just be happy someone cares. I promise.
Right, right.
Judge success by how long you can do what you love.
Right.
And not what tastemakers are liking your band,
yeah,
or saying you're cool. You know, if you're making a career out of what you love, you're winning, because everyone in the world does jobs they hate, and if you cannot do that, I promise you're winning. Focus on that side of the positive of it, and you know, embrace this side that may not be the sexiest,
mm-hmm,
aspect of it.
And from what I've seen, I don't really think that the approval of those tastemaker type people necessarily translates into any kind of business.
No.
Like, do you know the radio station KEXP by any chance?
I don't.
They're like one of the bigger indie stations. It's in Seattle, and they have a band play there every day, and they put it on YouTube. And I assumed that these bands were all big because KEXP is so credible and everyone,
right,
says they're so great. And I looked and some of them have like, you know, 1,200 views on this video and their channel has a million subscribers. And I'm like, well, nobody gives a shit what this DJ at KEXP thinks.
No, and that's what's funny too, is even my bands, you know, I don't want to mention anyone else. So like mentioning my bands, like the ones that get touted as like these cool bands have less ticket sales than,
yeah,
maybe like the more embarrassing bands. Or like my best streaming bands are like the bands that from the Warped Tour world,
mm-hmm,
you know, like by far, including bands that are signed to majors that have been around longer. Like that's just, all demographics are different. So trying to like pick anything, you know, do your best to plan and be strategic, but trying to say like, we're writing a record and we're going to tackle this,
yeah,
demographic.
Right, right.
It's like, dude, that is a disaster story that I've read the ending to so many times. And I'm like, some of my own friends' bands where I'm just like, this band's going to be huge and they're going to have fans forever. They have this cult following. And then they write like a pop record. And everyone's like, and they're like, no, just kidding. We're back. And it's too late.
It's too late.
Yeah.
Because they know, it doesn't feel authentic anymore.
Yeah.
Well, last question I have, which I touched on in a video. I'll tell you my point of view on it. See what you think. As far as, a lot of people ask me about working in the music industry. Like, how do I do that? A lot of people think, they ask, should I go to college for music business? And my answer is absolutely not. You just need to get out there and make friends and be in the right place at the right time and have some sort of skill.
Yeah, I mean, the boring word is networking. And it's just tried and true, 100%. I'm not the best manager in the world. I'm the best manager in my city, but I have a big network of people that know me, like me, trust me, and then I have the wherewithal to know that if I want to serve these bands properly, I need all these other people around me to help me serve properly. But to get started, which seems like that's like the question of your channel, it's all networking, 100%. I could be the best manager in the world. If I didn't know every time I die, they would have never hired me.
0%. And how did you know them? How did you get to know them? Because they're
I would tour with 18 Visions and Throwdown and either play the fest with E-Tate or they would jump on our tours.
And how do you know 18 Visions?
My senior year of high school, a kid got transferred into my school wearing an 18 Visions shirt. There was like 5 Harker kids in my class. And I'm just like, who? What? And he happened to know all the 18 Visions guys. So their drummer, Ken Floyd, I met him and he introduced me to that whole, like, I went to the school in Fountain Valley in Orange County and he introduced me to all the Newport Beach guys. And those are the guys that were in those bands. And just literally took me with him. Like, oh, this dude's cool. Come on over.
So that's the right place, right time.
Just met a dude.
Like, and you got to put yourself out there to do that. Like, nobody's going to come to your house and pull you off your couch and say, you seem like a cool guy. Let me introduce you to the world.
Totally.
Like, you have to put yourself out there.
Yeah, and I had to be willing to tour for free.
Right.
And, eat shit for a lot of years and take, even when I did start getting paid, take less. I would suggest, I just want to make this much. I don't want to get paid while these other guys are getting paid. Not having the confidence that, yet. So there's a lot of eating shit to get to where you are ready to even be a manager or anything in that world, But by far the biggest, still to this day, the biggest thing is networking. If I need to get on a tour, I can't just submit it through the agency and say like, hey, like, look at my band. It's like, okay, who knows this camp? Who knows? And I don't need to know. Don't take me right to their manager. If I got to climb a few people to get in the right space in the right room, just to be like finally co-signed by the right guy or the manager takes my call, great. I'll start however many little steps I got to take. But in my world, it's text terms, text terms with promoters, labels, agencies, it's very, very easy. I have this network built rock solid, but my network grew on tour. Like when I'm having an issue with someone on tour and they're playing like, I hate this room because of this. Like, oh man, I've been in that room. I can relate for this. It's like, I have a lot of experience and the fact that I've toured a lot, I meet those promoters and I meet these people in other cities and other, whatever. I don't even travel that much anymore. Mm-hmm. Now with the family, I'm not the guy that like flies to London for the big show or like gets to the New York show for the start of tour. I have too many bands and I got to pick my battles, I won't miss a show in SoCal, no matter what. I'll be in San Diego, OC, LA, like, I'm there. But to get me across the country, it's hard, dude. It's hard. I mean, I have 2 kids, and, like, I run the company and other side businesses and, like, just have my own hobbies. I'm, like, getting older, like, being away from, like, my routine of, like, the gym, jiu-jitsu and all that just sounds like a nightmare. And it's like, do you guys really want me here? Like, I know when I was on tour and it'd be New York and we're stressed out and everyone would be like, oh, by the way, management coming. The whole band goes, the whole band goes, you got to cater. And it's not that they don't like the manager, but it's just like you're in
one more layer of things to think about.
Just things to do. Yeah. And like this day and age, like we don't need to get into a room and like meet face to face with my booking agent every day. I don't. We text and talk 100 times a day. Just because our band's playing in New York doesn't mean like this is a new thing. And that's, I don't want to say that's like, that's bullshit. I see a lot of people doing it. It's just for me, the volume of stuff I'm doing and the kind of the relationship I've created with my bands. Like, I create responsible bands that don't need to be like handheld through everything. And if it's like a big thing and like, we're really stoked, like, of course I'll be there.
Yeah.
But you're 37th time playing, Chicago. Right. Like, I'm stoked. It's sold out. Like, trust me, I'm very grateful.
Do you really need Biggie
there?
Do
you need me there? Do I need to fly on a Thursday to be there on a Friday to rush back on a Saturday just to be shot? Like, you don't need me there. Just picture like any other show. It's going to go off just fine, you know?
And all right. Well, thank you very much for your words of wisdom. Super interesting. Is there anything you want to plug or promote or tell anybody watching to do?
I'm stoked you're even watching the channel because it means you're trying to do something a little left to center in some way of your life. And that's my biggest advice to anyone. Don't think you got to go get like a normal job and just fall into the rat race because the rat race sucks. So do whatever you can to not be the rat race. And if it means eating shit for a few years, there's nobody, almost nobody you know that's just like, yeah, I just walked in, everything was great. You eat shit and you eat a little less shit, and you eat a little less shit, and all of a sudden you're not eating shit anymore. So eat shit, but not too much shit.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home, think about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask? Good
morning. I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.